Good morning, Jeremy. Jeremy. Good morning to everyone. Welcome to our class this morning. We have some visitors, and we're glad to see you here this morning. I guess I have two opening comments this morning. One is, it is much easier to cover a narrative like Saul chasing David than it is to cover four Psalms. Okay. I never was very good at poetry in high school or college, and I guess the Psalms, I have some trouble with them too. So it's much easier to go through the narrative, but we got four Psalms this morning. Number two is, I did a very poor job of what I would like to do with 2 Samuel 7 Wednesday night. Mike and Jeff had thought questions interspersed through the chapter, and it kind of threw me a curve from where I'd like to have gone with it. So, this morning, that's what we're going to do. We'll go back to 2 Samuel 7. We're going to do a little bit again, not a whole chapter. But we're going to do it because these four Psalms all tie into 2 Samuel 7. So let's go back and review 2 Samuel 7 a little bit, and then we will go into these four Psalms to talk about them a little bit. 2 Samuel 7, if you remember, has really two main parts. It has the part where Nathan is delivering the prophecy of God, God's message to David, and then it turns right around, and David goes and sets before the Lord and prays to the Lord. Okay? So it's a message from God, and then it's David praying back to God. We're not going to look at the second part. We're not going to look at David praying to God this morning as we go through that. I will take one second and make a point here. This came up in our Bible class Friday night when we were meeting. Talking about the two-way communication with God. This is a great chapter to show that. God delivers David a message. David immediately then goes in and prays to God about that message. So as we're studying, as we open our Bibles and study, let's don't forget to read and meditate on what we read, but let's turn around and talk to God about it. How can I take what I'm reading and put it to use in my life? How can I better understand what I'm reading? What does it mean to me? So let's don't forget to read and pray and put the two together. Okay? This is sideline of thought from 2 Samuel 7. Okay, let's go back through 2 Samuel 7. And we'll use the same slides we had the other night, but we'll take those thought questions out and kind of get a better understanding of this chapter. And I made this point Wednesday night. And I was talking to Steve Friday, if you're running copies. And the point of the slide is, this is probably the most important book in the Samuels. And I think I said Wednesday night, if you took both the books of Samuels and Kings and Chronicles and put them all together, you probably got the most important chapter. And Steve kind of went a little further than that. He said, might be take Genesis chapter 12, which you know the promises to Abraham, and 2 Samuel 7, you got two of the most important chapters in the Old Testament. That's not to make total light of any of the rest of them, but the prophecies involved in these chapters are enormous. We all know Genesis 12 pretty much. Sometimes we don't recognize 2 Samuel 7 as we need to. And it takes really the rest of the Old Testament and all of the New Testament, at least up through the first part of it, at least, to really understand, totally understand what goes on in 2 Samuel 7 as God made his prophecies to David. The chapter starts off with David living in a house made of cedar. Our own king of Tyre had come down, sent cedars down from Lebanon, the mountains of Lebanon, sent workers down, had built David this house of cedar. Peace from his enemies all around. And where is the Ark of God? In a tent. So, whether it's a guilty conscience by David, whether he's just concerned about it, whether he's, I think to settle down, now I'm going to turn my attention to this or what. David decides he needs to build a place for the Ark, which is God's presence among the people. And so, he sets out and tells Nathan what he wants to do. Well, Nathan's a prophet. But he doesn't seem to be here in this case dealing in a prophetic mode because he tells David to go do it. But that night though, God appears to Nathan and he says, no, That's not what I want. Here's how he goes about it. He said, you go tell David. David, you go build me a house. Now, I don't know what all is included in that phrase. David, you think you can build a house for God? Is that part of what it means? I don't know. David, you gonna build me a house? Why? I didn't ask for it. You know, I'm God. If I want this, I'll ask for it. After all, if you go back to the tabernacle, who told them how to build the tabernacle? God did. Who told them the exact details about how to build a tabernacle? God did. Did he ever said anything to anybody about building him a house? He said, all the judges, when they were ruling, I didn't tell them to build me a house. David, why are you going to build me a house? Okay. That seems to be the kind of the way he starts the conversation off here. And then he goes and kind of reminds David of, look who you are here. I brought you out of your humble beginnings. You were a shepherd tending sheep when I called you here. And look what I've done for you. I have brought you up through all this time. I have made you king over all my people. I've given you rest from all your enemies. Things are going great for you. You're in this house of cedar. Look what I've done for you. Okay. Then the thing shifts from David going to build God a house to what? God's going to build David a house. It's like a strange shift. David's already got a house. So we talked the other night about there's a physical aspect, a spiritual aspect, all through this chapter. There's a what's going to happen now and through the earthly timeline. There's what's going to happen throughout eternity. So all these things are blended together in this chapter. And we have to look at them in context and pick them out. We particularly talked about the word forever and what the context of the word forever means. Does it mean like a man punches the hole in his ear to show he's going to be a servant? Forever means what? The rest of his life. It doesn't mean anything beyond that. Or it can mean through the current dispensation. Or it could be through the earth is destroyed. Or it could be through eternity. It's all according to how the context is used for the word forever. So we'll see that as we go through here a little bit. So, David, when your physical days are gone, when you die, when you go be with your fathers, there's going to be a physical offspring coming to you. I'm going to put on the throne. See the fourth of Solomon and the descendants of David beyond that. He will build me a house. Your son will build me a house, a physical house. Okay? Speaking of Solomon, we know Solomon builds a temple. David's going to get things ready for it. Solomon's going to build it. So he's going to build me a physical house, a temple, as we know of. God is going to establish the throne forever. Now we get this first use of the word forever here. How long is the throne of David going to last? What you talking about? The physical throne on the earth? Or are you talking about because through David, Christ is going to come and his reign is going to last forever, forever. It is a jewel, very much a jewel, Freddie. You're exactly right. He will establish his throne forever. God will be his father and he will be God's son. Who is God's son? Christ is, okay? So now we shift in the blend here between some of the physical and some of the spiritual. Now, how much did David know about this? We're going to see some of that come out in the lesson this morning when we look at the Psalms. How much David really knew about some of this stuff he's talking about. We don't really know, but we know some of it. And we'll get that. It'll come out a little bit later on. He says, when he commits iniquity, I'll chastise him. I won't remove him like I did Saul. What happened to Saul when he disobeyed God? What did God do to him? Back in 1 Samuel 13, and then again in 15. Look at how to be the king. That was the end of his dynasty, if you will. A one-man dynasty. No succession of his children. What's going to happen to David's offspring as they commit iniquity? I will chastise them. I'll bring them back. I'll send them off to captivity. Even when it comes to his son, he'll lay the sins of all men on there, if you will. And put his, our iniquities on him, Isaiah 53. So I'm not going to withdraw from him, like I did Saul. Again, it's a blending of the two together here. So David's house, his kingdom, his throne will be established forever. That term again there. We got to again look at how it's being used there. So, note here. When it says it's going to be established forever, we can switch back to spiritual. We're talking about his kingdom being through the church. So these things Nathan spoke to David. Now, put the summary right here. God did not permit David to build him a house. He said no. But he said, I'll build you a house. The house carries on two different aspects. A physical aspect, the kingdom of Solomon and the descendants of David, the physical temple built in Jerusalem. It also carries on a spiritual aspect in the kingdom of Christ and the new Jerusalem. Christ will reign forever. And we'll pick that up again in one of the Psalms this morning. We talk about Christ being king and ruling in his kingdom. We'll pick that up later on to go through one of these Psalms over here. So I don't know if that helped you or not to put 2 Samuel 7, the prophecy, a little better in context. It is a blend between what's going to happen for David physically and spiritually, and the long term, and the kingdom of Christ being set up forever. Okay? If you go over to Revelation chapter 5, I got two verses here on the screen, just to show this contrast of this eternity here. If you go all through the Old Testament prophets, what happens to the descendants of David through the kings there, they should captivity, the return, and the New Testament time frame, the establishment of the church. We'll get some of that this morning. All the way over to Revelation, when John looks into heaven and sees that the scene there, and in chapter 5, verse 2, they look for someone who is worthy to open the seals. And who they find? About the next verse, past verse 5, and it's this lamb, and though he's been slain, which we know it's talking about Christ as it comes in there. But look what's said about him in verse 5. Do not weep, behold the Lion of the tribe of Judah, David's tribe, the root of David, has prevailed to open the seal. Look at Christ, the one who has now been exalted. He's the one that's worthy to open the seals. Even in Revelation, it ties it all the way back. All the way back to David here. What I want to see. Okay? So this prophecy in 2 Samuel 7 carries throughout. All the way over here. We see it happening way out here in the book of Revelation. You've heard that. Comments, anybody, about this? We'll move off of this. Randy, go ahead, sir. You got it wrong. Yep. David had inquired of the Lord over and over. We talked about that. Inquired of the Lord, inquired of the Lord. This time, he wanted to build a house, and Nathan said, go ahead. The Lord stepped in. And they didn't know what he really wanted to be done. All right, let's look at these Psalms. Like I said, for me, it's not the easiest thing in the world to do. But these four Psalms will tie very much back to what we've been talking about. Let's go to Psalms 89 first. And it's a long one, so we're not going to read all the way through it. But let's look at some of the things we might want to talk about and point out through this Psalm here. Two of the notes first. If you glance down at verse 10, it references Rahab. You have broken Rahab in pieces. I got a footnote there what Rahab's talking about. Footnote show in your Bible. Egypt, okay? We'll know that just by reading through it. Okay, it takes some scholars better than I am to figure out and put that link together, but that's what That's what the footnote here says, and if you go read a bunch of the scholars, Rahab here is returning to Egypt when God broke them and brought the children of Israel out of Egypt there. Verse 12, you got a reference to Tamar and Hermon. What are those? It's Tamar and Hermon. Two mountains. There are mountains in Israel, and God's looking at the text, Ezra that wrote this thing, Ezra, right? It's talking about the city of God, and Tamar is one of the mountains. We're talking about how high Jerusalem is already, 2,800 feet. I didn't look up Mount Hermon. It's way up in the north, snow-capped most of the year round. Where all the waters come from, that makes the Jordan River, it's a snow belt off of Hermon, about 9,000 feet, taking my mind somewhere, high mountain, he's referencing there. Verse 19, he mentions the Holy One. You spoke the vision to your Holy One. Again, probably should be, if you look at some of the other translations, got once plural, speaking probably to Samuel, Nathan, maybe even Gad, a prophet in this time here. So maybe more than one prophet is talking about there speaking through. So let's just glance through here right quick and see about a little bit about this. I will sing of the mercies of the Lord forever. With my mouth I'll make known your faithfulness to all generations. It's written by Ethan, not by David. Verse 1, very familiar song we sing there. Verses 3 and 4. Talk about a covenant with David. I chose a covenant with my servant David. So I sworn to him, your seed I established forever and built your throne. Very what we're talking about in 2 Samuel chapter 7. And I actually put the words of this song up here. We sing this same part of these first two verses here a lot. I'll sing the mercies of the Lord forever. My mouth I'll make known thy faithfulness to all generations. The first two verses of this song. Make up that song there. So then Ethan goes on and talks about the heavens praising God. Who in the heavens is compared to you? This praise he gives to God. Your broken Rahab in pieces, verse 10, talking about Egypt. When they came out of Egypt, scattered your enemies with your mighty arm. More praise down through there. Let's go on down a little further. And here a couple more points I'll make about this one. Again, verse 19, made a vision to your Holy One. It could be Nathan or it could be Samuel, several prophets, Samuel, Nathan, the little ones in that time frame there. I have found my servant David. My holy oil have anointed him, with whom my hand will be established, my arm be strengthened. Again, references back to David, the promises to him there. My faithfulness, my mercy shall be with him. And he shall hear me cry, you are my Father, my God, the rock of my salvation. I will make him, David, my firstborn, the highest of the kings of the earth. My mercies I will keep for him forever. And then, down about, let's see, oh, let's go down 35. I think it is. 36, his seed will endure forever, his throne as a son before me, I will establish his kingdom forever. Then 38, things kind of turn around, looks like a little bit. All this praise he's been doing, look at 38, but you've cast off and abhorred, you've been furious with your anointed ones. You've renounced the covenant to your servant. I'm not sure what he's talking about. It could be the turning away of Solomon and then late in his life, away from God, with all his wives and his idols. It could be time of Rehoboam when the kingdom was split. He's referencing here in this song. Maybe even later on in the times when the kings got so bad they take away into captivity. Verse 46, how long will you hide, O Lord, hide yourself forever? And he comes back in 49. Where is your former loving kindness which you swore to David? So we first back to what he had done to David. Let's look at these slides here a minute. Far-reaching promises he made. Verse 7, very verse that just kind of grabs you to go through here. God is ready to be feared in the assembly of the saints. Held in reverence by those around him. Think about that with us when we come into the assembly here. God is to be held in very high reverence. He's to be feared, all for God. They're coming before Him. God's speaking in this vision to Nathan about which we already seen with David. God's great loving kindness for David. His covenant is confirmed to him. We put to that in verses 28 and 29. God establishes his descendants forever. Prophecy directly involves David's throne, his seed, and his children. But we get then, I said in verse 38 down there, and you get the unfaithfulness type thing. So it's even pointed out here on the slide that Ethan could have lived all up to Rehoboam before he wrote this and saw what happened to the kingdom out there. We don't know that. So that was a little longer, a little more difficult maybe to pick out some of the things there. Go 132, it's short. And some of the verses will tie right back into what we got here. This is titled A Song of Ascents. I don't know what a song of ascents is. I look it up and see nobody else does either. There are 15 of them here, starting Psalms 134, 124. So the next 15 Psalms are all entitled Psalm of Ascent. So the scholars are very mixed up on what a Psalm of Ascent is. So they started off and they sang it with a low tone and then built up in there, one suggestion. Lord, remember David and all his afflictions. I swore to the Lord. He vowed the mighty God of Jacob. Surely I will not go into the chamber of my house, David's house, or go up with comfort to my bed. I will not give sleep to my eyes or slumber to my eyelids until I find a place for the Lord and a dwelling place for the mighty God. Very direct reference to David saying, I won't go to my bed and sleep in my house until what? I've got a house for God. Okay. We heard it in Ephrath. We found it in the fields of the woods. Let's go to his tabernacle. Let us worship at his footstool. Arise, O Lord, to your resting place, you and your ark and your strength. Let your priests be clothed with righteousness, your saints' joy. For your servant David's sake, do not turn away from your anointed. The Lord has sworn in the truth to David, he will not turn from it. I will set up your throne, the fruits of your body. If your sons keep my commandments, my testimony which I teach them, I shall sit on my throne forevermore. The Lord has chosen Zion. He has desired it for his habitation. This is my resting place for Zion, by the way, it's a reference to Jerusalem. He desired it for his habitation. This is my resting place forever. Here I will dwell, for I desired it. I will abundantly bless her provisions. I will satisfy the poor with bread, clothe the priest with salvation, her saints with Shavuot. There I will make the horn of David grow, a pair of lamps for my anointed. His enemies I will clothe with shame, but upon his crown shall flourish. So, who the writer is, I'm not sure. They put little slides here that they thought it might be David based on what's in Acts 2. The possibility that it's Solomon writing about David, looking back on it. Again, in verses 1 through 5, talking about David building God a house, which we talked about already. The promises he gave to him. Zion is chosen, his chosen city. We'll have Zion, Jerusalem, and the new Zion, the new Jerusalem. Peter refers to this psalm on the day of Pentecost and ties it back to Christ, linking Christ, prophecy of Christ, to this promise of David here. Okay. And we'll get more to Acts 2 just a little bit later on. So let's just kind of get to a few more of these psalms and we'll tie some of this stuff together. Go to Psalm 16 now. It ties right in with the same thing. Again, a little short psalm. Psalm 16. Preserve me, O God, for in you I put my trust. My soul you have said to the Lord, you are my God, you are my Lord. Your goodness is nothing apart from you. To the saints are on the earth, the excellent ones in whom is all my delight. Your sorrows shall be multiplied who hasten for another God. Their drink offering of blood I will not offer nor take their names on my lips. You, O Lord, are the portion of my inheritance and my cup. You maintain my lot. The lines have fallen to me in pleasant places. Yes, I have a good inheritance. I will bless the Lord who has given me counsel, and my heart also instructs me in the night seasons. I have set the Lord always before me, because he is my right hand, I shall not be moved. Therefore my heart is glad, and my glory rejoices. My flesh also will rest in hope. And here's the quote here, verse 10, that ties back into Acts chapter 2. For you will not leave your soul in Sheol, nor will you allow your Holy One to see corruption. You will show me the path of life. Your presence is full of joy. at your right hand are pleasures forevermore. So, here the point's made, as I said earlier, we don't know how much David knew about the future of these promises God was making to him in 2 Samuel chapter 7. Nathan tells David what God has said. How much did David comprehend, even as he looked forward, knowing, I mean, if you told David some of these things, how could he possibly comprehend what's going to happen down that far down the road, and the coming of Christ and all this stuff? But we do know from things David says, as quoted from him in Acts 2, he understood some things about the resurrection of Christ. And we'll tie that together here just in a minute. Peter quotes from David on the day of Pentecost regarding Christ, and he quotes his psalm here, in verse 10, not leaving my soul in Sheol, or live out your Holy One to see corruption. So this psalm here is linked directly to Acts chapter 2 and Christ. So David knew that God had sworn to him about his physical kingdom. And he was set one on his throne. This is Bob Waldron from his book that we use kind of the guidelines for this here. This quote here is, David foresaw this and being a prophet. David's referred to as a prophet in Acts chapter 2. He spoke of Christ that would live and reign forever. We'll see that in Acts 2 just in a minute. But notice this quote here from Bob. Let's go to 1:10 and we'll tie it all back together. Again, a short song. Seven verses. The Lord said to my Lord. Now, we'll start reading this. The Lord said to my Lord. What's different about those two words, Lord, there? Look at your text. Lord and Lord. What's different about the two? One got all caps in it, and one got lower letters in it. Most translations have it that way. What's the difference? Anytime you see the translation of the word Lord, all capital letters, it's Jehovah. It's a name so high, so reverent, that the Israelites would not even speak that word. It's talking about Jehovah God, whenever you see the all caps there. So the Lord, Jehovah, said to my Lord, and we'll come back and talk about who that is here in a minute, sit at my right hand, which denotes a ruler, okay? Sit at my right hand. This ruler sitting at the right hand of God. And I'll make your enemies your footstool. The Lord, Jehovah, shall send the rod of your strength out of Zion, ruling in the midst of your enemies. Your people shall be volunteers in the days of your power, in the beauty of holiness, in the woman of the morning. You have the deer of your youth. The Lord has sworn, Jehovah, and will not relent. You are a priest. Hold that in mind. You, whoever you is here, that he's talking about, it's my Lord up here, you're a priest. So we got him being a ruler and a priest. Okay. Not Jehovah, but this my Lord we're talking about, ruler and a priest. According to the order of Melchizedek, the Lord, small letters, is at your right hand. He shall execute kings in the day of his wrath. He's only a judge, okay? He shall judge among the nations. He shall fill the places with dead bodies. He shall execute the heads of many countries. He shall drink of the brook by the wayside. Therefore, he shall lift up his head. Now, just sit here and look at this psalm. If you don't think about it and get some depth to it, we've got denoted here someone being talked about. Jehovah's talking about my Lord, referred to. It's going to be a ruler, a priest, and a judge. Now, we can also kind of think about that and who that is, right? This was written many years ago. So, Psalms 110. Writer's David. David predicts that God will make one person, both ruler and priest, king and priest, and also through judge in that. this king is going to be from the tribe of Judah. Okay. Now, you think all the king being from the tribe of Judah? A king being from the tribe of Judah? Nothing wrong with that. What tribe is David from? Judah. And all his descendants, all the kings of Israel were from the tribe of Judah. You think all the king being from the tribe of Judah? Not a thing in the world. What's the problem here? Priest problem, okay? You have a priest in the tribe of Judah. Why is that a problem? All the priests in the Old Testament were from the tribe of Levi, okay? So for David's time, for David to make this prophecy way back here at this time, if there's going to be a priest from the tribe of Judah, pretty astounding thing, because at that time, the priesthood was from the tribe of Levi. So David is prophesying down in time. That's why we say David knew more about what was going to happen later on than we might think he did, from what Nathan told him. So, David gives a true nature of Christ, and this, the point on the slide, if you go over to Matthew chapter 22, it won't take time to do it, but go to Matthew chapter 22, Christ uses this very passage with the Pharisees, and they didn't comprehend it. The elite spiritual people of Jesus' time could not even comprehend what was being said in this psalm here. Yes. Verse 4, you're a priest forever for the order of Melchizedek. What's Melchizedek first mentioned? Back in Genesis, where he runs into Abraham. When he's returning from the slaughter of the kings who captured Lot. Remember that story? Abraham gives Melchizedek a tenth. Okay, recognizing him as a priest forever. The order of Melchizedek. I think of that order. It couldn't come to the order of Levi. So that's a different priesthood. A priest forever. Another word there. The Lord is at your right hand. Lord, small Lord, your Lord. Go to Acts chapter 2. Let's look at that a minute. Go to Acts chapter 2. We'll try to tie all this thing together right quick. Acts chapter 2. Peter's quoting from David. Got about verse 32, I think, is where it starts. Actually, let's go to 29. Where he starts off as his sermon. Men and brethren, let me speak freely of the patriarch David. He's both dead and buried. His tomb is with us to this day. David was dead. David was buried there. They knew that. But being a prophet and knowing that God has swore an oath to him, 2 Samuel 7, okay, that of the fruit of his body, according to the flesh, he would raise up Christ to sit on the throne. Was Christ fleshly a descendant of David? Yes, he was, through Mary. We've already pointed that out in Luke chapter 2, the genealogy there. We talked about that earlier. He, foreseeing this, spoke concerning the resurrection of Christ. David knew about the resurrection of Christ. Apparently, God had revealed some things to David that we don't have recorded back in the Old Testament time frame. He, foreseeing this, spoke concerning the resurrection of Christ, that his soul would not be left in Hades, nor his flesh in corruption. We saw where David wrote that earlier. This Jesus God has raised up. Takes that in and talks about what David had prophesied and uses somebody familiar to them, David, to talk to these Jews about what David had prophesied. So he says, the Lord, capital letters, said to my Lord, okay, sit at my right hand. Capital letters, Jehovah. Jehovah said to my Lord. Who is my Lord? Jesus Christ. The Lord, Jehovah, David prophesied. And Peter quotes it here. Jehovah said unto, David called him my Lord. How did David call him my Lord? He wasn't even on the earth to know that to David yet. At that point. Through prophecy. Okay. So the Lord, Jehovah, David prophesied. The Lord said to my Lord, Jehovah said to Christ, who would be my Lord, David's prophesying, sit at my right hand. Christ. Okay. David calls him my Lord. So we see prophecy here, particularly in 110, of Christ as a ruler, as a priest, not the tribe of Levi, a priest forever, in the order of Melchizedek, and as a judge, all brought out in Psalm 110. I hope that might help tie 2 Samuel 7, some of the Psalms, particularly 110, and what happens over here later then in Acts chapter 2, all together. That 2 Samuel 7 is looking forward to the coming of Christ. His death, and his soul not being left in Hades. His soul didn't see corruption. God raised him up. David knew that. David was prophesying that. But not here. Okay. I said, it's much harder for me to go over that than it is to talk about Saul chasing David. Okay. Comments? Yep. Got to remind him where he came from. And David recognized it. But as he turned, I said, he hears from God, he turns right around and prays to God about exactly what he just heard about God told him through Nathan there. And if you look at the last part of chapter 2 Samuel 7, it says, Lord, let come to pass what you have said. Okay. Okay. Somebody else? We've got 2 minutes left. I'm finished. Okay. You get 2 minutes extra break time this morning. Okay. Thank you very much.